tackle.
Wow.
Yeah. And that's Actors from the London Stage was brought into Notre Dame before it had been handled by, I think, University of North Carolina. And before then, UC Santa Barbara. So it has had multiple hands as well. But now that we have this year round organization, we can now be the American home for the Actors from the London Stage group.
Do you have a like an objective to produce like the entire canon over a period of time or well, anything like that? I mean, well, it's like the Stratford does that. It's
right,
like,
right,
every
right.
10 years they're supposed to produce all of them or something right. like that.
Well, in the past,
PBS
did it, and we've been talking to this a little off mic, and just the fact that there are some very minor Shakespeare productions and okay. some of those don't necessarily have the draw. I mean, we're talking about, you know, how do you get people to come see Shakespeare? And if they want to see, you know, I guess Henry VIII or, you know, a show you don't even realize or, you
it's
know,
Shakespeare.
Yeah. Or, right. you know, Love's Labor's Lost, Cymbeline, Pericles, you know, some of these shows that you're not as familiar with, like a Scottish play. Am I allowed to say the word? Are we in a
Scottish play?
I can't say it. Okay. But like a King Lear or Romeo and Juliet
sure.
or, you know, the shows that you're like, oh, that's Shakespeare. I'm aware mm-hmm. of that show. So I guess a long answer to a short question is, we would like to. There's 38 plays that we need to work through. And when you're only doing one main stage
yeah.
Production a year, it's going to take a long time to get through some of the minor plays. The idea now is to expand our season to include more than one main stage production. And that's what we're doing this summer, starting that as kind of a pilot program, seeing if it works. And if it does, I would imagine we'll produce some of the smaller titles or the less, I mean, none of the titles are bad, but you know, some of the lesser known titles.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I've seen Henry VIII.
Yeah.
Not a big fan.
Not a big fan of Henry VIII. No.
I can't wait for them to get to Titus.
I love Titus.
Oh, and, okay.
But when you can do a show, in a smaller venue that doesn't require as much, ticket revenue to support it. We have the beautiful resources of the DeBartolo Performing Arts Center, and there is in that complex 100-seat black box theater. That's the kind of stage I think that can support some of these smaller right. titles. I know that Grant Mudge, the producing artistic director of the festival, has the desire to work through the canon. So that the desire is there, whether or not the capacity is there, it depends on how we can expand our season and how many of the people listening today are going to come to our shows and okay, help us be successful.
Once you get through the big, like Romeo and Juliet, Midsummer Night's Dream, Taming the Shrew, the Dirty Dozen, how do you decide which one is coming next?
I think a lot of it has to do with our stable of directors, our stable of people who are really involved and passionate about the Shakespeare at Notre Dame. If you have a director who's like, man, I've always wanted to direct X, you know, like we had a few years ago, we did Cymbeline, and that's because our producing artistic director at the time, J. Paul Skelton, who's now in London, that was just his dream to direct a beautiful, you know, fully produced version of Cymbeline. So luckily we were able to do that for him. We have a lot of great, you know, David Bell, who's an amazing, yeah. you know, nationally renowned director. He's directed for us several times. You know, if he was saying, you know, I really want to do, I don't know, you know, one of the smaller titles or something like that, we probably would be able to do it based on the gravitas of a name like David Bell. David Bell presents,
yeah.
you know, whatever the title is, Pericles. He just actually directed that at Chicago Shakespeare, and it was very well received because he has a beautiful vision, and you know, you can sell it on sometimes a director's credence. So that's one of the ways we decide. Some of it is like we have a director who directed for us for the first time last year named Wes Tyler. He is, I guess, nationally known for directing the tours of Jersey Boys. He directed How the Grinch Stole Christmas and, you know, some of these big Broadway premieres. And now he is known globally as a circus director.
Really?
So yeah, you don't even think about, okay, there's a director to a circus, but right. he does that. And so thinking about what shows would lend themselves to a circus theme or
like Pippin.
Well, yeah. Or I mean, what Shakespeare shows, I mean, there's
yeah,
a few,
I want, mean.
Yeah,
but that's what you never think of.
Yeah. And so that's kind of how you answer that question right. is, okay, do we have someone with a skill set to lend a really interesting vision to a show you may have
that'd be great.
Not have reimagined in that way. So I, as an audience development manager,
yes.
I want to, to do the Dirty Dozen because it's easier to sell a show that people are familiar with. You know, once, and I think this is true with any theater, once you establish trust with your patronage, once your patrons say, I believe in you, I believe what you're going to put on the stage is going to be amazing, I'm going to trust and just buy tickets. You know, that's where you start
Don't you think every theater rises and falls on that?
I do. I think too many people count on the title to do the work for them. And I don't think that's honest, because I think it is, especially in community and civic theater, it's the trust of your patrons. And that's when you start to have a really good base of season ticket holders. That's a good barometer for how much they trust you. Am I willing to say I'm going to see 4, 5, 6, 7 whatever shows that you're doing because I know it's going to be good? I mean, I don't even care what the title is. I know it's going to be good because you've decided to put it on the season.
Okay. Well, around here, I don't know what audience base you're talking about. Where are you developing? I mean, into Chicago, into Indianapolis?
Well,
or is it, cause I'm figuring right around this particular small piece of the sky. It's very difficult
corner of the sky.
To sell Shakespeare.
I heard a really interesting factoid a few years ago about audience development. They said for every hour of circumference geographically that you want to draw from, you have to provide 4 hours of entertainment. So unless you have a legitimate season where you can have more than one show to come to, you're going to have to rely on other things in the community to bring someone there. So, so that's why one of the main reasons I've been a major proponent of expanding the season, because once I have two shows, okay, that's 4 to 5 hours, you know, depending on the show, that's now enough to get out to, you know, the Michigan lakefront, or, you know, that's enough to get almost like Kalamazoo, to a Fort Wayne. To a month, you start to get a little further, but until you're having 2 days of entertainment, you're not going to get the Chicago, you're not going to get the Indianapolis, the Detroit. And so that's, I always thought that was a really interesting number to think about.
Is that the goal? Is that
you're talking about
then?
4 hours in period.
You need 4 hours of compressed entertainment. So that's more than a show. More than you know, 2.5 hours. You're getting about 45 minutes away, you know, right?
Right.
You know, if you think that, and that's about right. When you think, think about your patronage, you know, we're getting in South Bend, we're getting Goshen, you know, we're getting Warsaw, we're getting some of those, you know, that perimeter. But until we really start to offer our audiences a larger selection where they can come and stay for a weekend, then it's probably not going to be, I'm not targeting Chicago.
Well, Kent, part of that 4 hours
of
Kent, 4 hours of that, part of that 4 hours of entertainment, though, can be other things inside
and that's
the community.
Why, and that's
though,
why right? visitors bureaus and things like that try to bundle and try to figure out a lot to do. I mean, the fact that we're on Notre Dame, I think, offers an hour or two of entertainment
if
you're
around.
Interested in that. And often we get people who are like, you know, I was on campus, I found out that you were doing this. So again, we're bundling on the reputation of Notre Dame.
Well, and another thing that's kind of interesting for you, though, is because you are within an hour of the lakefront. I mean, that does that push then that hour or that out to another location? Does that make sense?
Well, so I think
if you can draw on the lakefront, get people to the lakefront, then can you from Chicago, then can you get the people that are at the lakefront then in to see you?
Well,
does that make sense?
I think the purposes of
Marshall
that
for, shaking your head.
I don't think so, because then it's just a kind of a progression leg by leg.
They
by
need
leg.
To come to
they
you.
They have to come. They have to be purposefully coming to your events. And if they decide I'm going to take a weekend in South Bend, you know, then this can definitely be part of that attraction. And that's, I work very closely with Visit South Bend, Michiana, you know, the community bureau and the tourist visitors bureau and those kind of things, you know, and they're always trying to find new ways to say, okay, what else is going on this weekend? What else is going on this summer, to attract people to this area?
Now, one thing I think is cool that you guys do is, and I think you're still doing, is the shake scenes though with
Absolutely.
The kids, which kind of does give a chance for people who might have that interest of youth as well, a chance to come in and see something done by youth, as well as your young company.
And I think
as well,
different demographics. I mean, there's a demographic of people who are tourist visitors to come see it. And then there's the community partners, you know, the people who believe in our organization locally and want to be a part of it. And that's, I think, one of the main reasons we do shake scenes. And for the person who is not aware of it, but it's basically, that's a weekend festival of community Shakespeare. Everybody produces, you know, 10 to 15 minute scenes. So i.e. the name Shake Scenes, and those scenes are bundled together for different scenes on both Sunday and Saturday. So there's like 2 hours of 10 different groups on both Saturday and Sunday of, you know, 20 totally, the collective 20 different community groups who just say, you know, I support you and I want to put together a scene so I can be part of this larger thing that is Shakespeare at Notre Dame and the Notre Dame Shakespeare Festival.
Is that focused primarily on schools or a community?
It's hard because of the summer, because, yeah, you know, we are still at the end of the summer. That performs the third weekend of July traditionally, and it's the 18th and 19th of July this year.
Okay.
So you get the teachers who are passionate, who believe in the programming, and they kind of on their own gather a few students that they really believe in. You know, Stanley Clark and Deborah Jurassic-Chansky has been, you know, fundamentally involved in that. She was the coordinating director in the first few years. That's now, that torch has passed to Christy Burgess, who works at the Robinson Community Center. Mm-hmm. She has a Shakespeare, amazing Shakespeare company called the Robinson Shakespeare Company, RSC, that is doing amazing work with the Robinson Community Learning Center's youth organization.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, I'm working with Megan Beard, who's the arts magnate at Clay. She's going to be presenting, I think, their West Side Story, you know, a cutting of West Side Story. Yeah. So we really think outside of the box. Last year, Scott Shepley, who is works at South Bend Civic Theater, his family and a few other people put together one of the Star Wars, the new Shakespeare.
Oh, you're kidding.
Yeah. They kind of reimagined Star Wars and Shakespearean verse.
I love that book.
Those books. And so they just found, they kind of abridged the book into this wonderful iambic pentameter version of Star Wars.
Very fun.
So yeah, like I said, so it's anything that even is influenced or inspired by Shakespeare. And that's why it's so fun, because you don't know, okay, you're going to see a scene from Merchant of Venice, and then you're going to see Star Wars, and then you're going to see West Side Story, you know? So that's fun. And that audience is completely, I guess, in my job, is to court as many different kinds of audiences as possible. So the tourist crowd who's coming to see a professional production of X is a different crowd than the one who's going to be involved directly with something like Shake Scenes.
Sure.
And then we have the third program, which is our Young Company, which is wonderful because that's a touring group from our college, because a residency program during the summer. And that goes to, you know, parks and like the Wellfield gardens.
Right.
We go there every year. For this year, we're kind of expanding again to try to reach some communities we haven't been to. So we're going to St. Joe for the first time, because they have an amazing, as you said,
art festival and
things. So we're going out there, you know, Warsaw, you know, that kind of our perimeter to just say, hey. So it works in tandem. You know, we go out to then bring them in, we hope, the next month.
Good.
Yeah.
You must wear a lot of hats.
You know, in the summer, my hat is the Notre Dame Shakespeare Festival. I mean, that's what I'm doing.
But there's so many parts of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Because we don't have a staff really for publicity, for marketing, for advertising. We have a very generous designer who's part of Arts and Letters named Chantel Snyder. And she does a lot of our design work, and she creates some of the posters and the brochures.
But I have to say, I've seen some of the most gorgeous sets I've ever seen.
And
at Shakespeare, well, when it was the Shakespeare Festival, because I know Todd Rosenthal, who
directs, Tony Award winning,
and he did the most beautiful, I think it was Midsummer. He did our
Romeo and Juliet, and the last one we did.
It my lord,
staggeringly beautiful.
It's like you couldn't see anything better than that.
And that's one of the wonderful things about our main stage production, is it is a professional technical company, as well as just not just the actors, but, you know, we hire professional stage managers and professional costumers and professional, you know, set designers. So you really are seeing, I mean, one of the taglines we go is, you know, world class theater right next door. And it's true. I mean, we're spending the money that you need to spend to get the quality that you expect in somewhere like Chicago or New York. And so, like, our costumes last year for Henry IV, I think we created over, I think it was 140 new costumes were built for that show. And so those are the kind of things that you'll see on the stage that you're just going to be like, am I in South Bend?
Okay, then what do you do with them afterwards?
We have a stock.
Do you?
We have a beautiful stock. And that's one thing that they've been very conscientious about is taking care of those costumes, because you know, we often cut and, you know, pull a costume or two or a dozen, you know, from one show to another. The thing that you run into is a director's vision. If a director has a very specific vision for a show, he's not going to want to use costumes from another director's specific vision or another costumer's specific vision.
Okay. So if I'm in the middle of an area where I think that it would support a Shakespeare festival, but there is not one. How do I start one? Do you try to find a unique angle on the whole thing so that it's different than every other Shakespeare festival out there in some way? Or what's the starting from scratch point on something like that?
Well, I think there's enough Shakespeare festivals to say that it's viable. You know, you can do it no matter where you are. I mean, there's Shakespeare festivals in Fairbanks, Alaska. There's Shakespeare festivals in, the very heartland of Arkansas. I mean, they're everywhere. I mean, there's hundreds of them. We're actually hosting the Shakespeare Theater Association, and there's literally hundreds of theaters that come and represent say, well, okay, what's worked for you? What's worked for you? And that'll go from anywhere from like Stratford, which is, a staff of hundreds, budgets in the millions, to,
And that's what people think about when they think of a Shakespeare festival. At least people in this area, they think, Stratford.
Right. Yeah. But then you have very, very small grassroots bootstraps Shakespeare festivals that, to Dave's point, will just start because there's a need or because you have this passionate group of people.
Right.
Yeah. He's still the most produced playwright in the world. I mean, 400 years after his death at this point. So I think that says something for the quality of the work itself. And I think the timelessness of the text. I mean, I know, some of us in this room may not like it as much as others, but I think you can't deny the way that Shakespeare can speak to the human condition in a way that maybe modern playwrights don't or choose not to. I think it's a very, the specificity of modern plays, they're speaking to one particular thing, one particular time. And I think Shakespeare goes beyond that, goes above that, and speaks to the human condition in a way I've never encountered another playwright.
More universal stories.
Yeah.
Right.
And even if it's a very specific story, like the Scottish play that's dealing with one king in one moment, it's not just about the historicity of it or, the hermeneutics of it. It's about the human condition as distilled through that one moment.
So.
Absolutely.
And now that I have to go look up hermeneutics.
Sorry, we're going to do it.
Really?
Thanks, Aaron.
You're welcome. If you prefer exegesis, I'll use exegesis.
There's another good one there. We go to. What is hermeneutics?
Oh, don't do that, David.
It's just how a certain time or how a culture interprets its time and how universal that can be.
Wow.
See, that's not
now
hard.
I'm more impressed with that than with the word.
There we go. All right. Well, that kind of wraps us up here for this episode of Theater Geeks.
See our shows.
Can't top that.
They really are great.
Yeah, I would like to thank Aaron Nichols for joining us this time. And don't forget to stop by the store at theatergeeks.com/store. Answer the phone, John. And, let's see. We have hats, cups, mugs, all kinds of stuff like that. I'm going to stop for a second here.
Yeah, really? Who forgot to turn off the phone?
I don't know.
It's probably someone calling to tell me I defined hermeneutics.
Right? I forget who forgot.
No, this you can listen to yourself on this.
I'll start over with the wrap up.
The edit.
Okay.
August 4th through the 30th. See William Shakespeare's long last first play.
Is it?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. We need to ask.
You need to give
and
the
give
dates.
It, give me something.
And give
us a website.
To know
Let me
and
do that.
Where your website is and when tickets go on sale.
Grant will kill me if I don't get all that out.
Who will?
Grant Mudge.
Oh, does he ever? All I can think of is Annie.
I know the Mudges.
The Mudges.
I said that the first time I met him.
Why would you not change your name? Oh, it's Mr. Mudge. No.
The best part is his middle name is starts with an S, and he uses it in his signature. So it looks like
it
Grant
looked like Smudge.
Smudge.
Don't you know the Mudges?
Yeah, the Mudge. Annie Mudge.
Oh, I remember that.
Oh yeah.
Vaguely.
How could you forget when everybody and his brother does Annie every other year?
I heard the latest movie of Annie was just god awful.
Well, didn't see it much around there, did you?
No, it didn't last.
No.
More reinterpretations.
Well, I think it was a reinterpretation that wasn't, it was sort of a solution to a problem that didn't exist. More Annie. Do we need more Annie?
No. Is your phone off now, John?
Well, I can't turn that one off. That's
why don't you unplug it?
It's cordless, so even if you unplug it, it's going to ring.
Well, then,
so we have to put. And last time we took it out of the room, and I didn't do it this time. I forgot.
All right,
so it's out there now.
Well, now we have to do this.
We're going to do the closer again
because of you,
Aaron. It's all your fault.
Hmm. No, it's not. You forgot the phone.
Why do I have to remember the phone?
Because you do.
Why can't you walk in here?
I didn't
remember
even see the phone behind Aaron.
Dave, let's just finish this up.
No. Oh God. Okay, go.
Okay, well, that wraps up this episode of Theater Geeks, and I'd like to thank Aaron Nichols for being with us. And if you'd like to know more about hermeneutics and Shakespeare, where do you go at for the Shakespeare Festival or for the
show? It's real easy. shakespeare.nd.edu.
Okay, and the festival, Shakespeare Notre Dame, is when?
The Notre Dame Shakespeare Festival, their 16th season, is this summer. We have what we talked about, Shake Scenes, is the middle of July, the 18th and 19th, the weekend. We have Love's Labor's Lost, which is our young company touring student group. They will be going all over through July and August, and we will actually have two professional main stage productions this year, so that's exciting. We're actually expanding. The first is a premiere of a new show titled William Shakespeare's Long Lost First Play, Abridged. Yeah, and that's going to be a fun, fast-paced farce, probably 90 minutes, great family fun, and that's going to be starting on August 4th, and will run all through the month, closing on the 30th. At the same time, the last two weekends of August will be The Winter's Tale, which is a beautiful fairy tale. Many of you may not be familiar with it, but I would vouch, it's a lovely, lovely play that really should be in that Dirty Dozen. And that will be in the beautiful Patricia DCO Main Stage Theater there at the DeBartolo Performing Arts Center. And that's going to be the 18th through the 30th, again, of August. So August is a big month for us.
What's funny is that you're doing two of my favorite shows, Love's Labor's Lost, which is the very first Shakespeare I ever saw at the Stratford Shakespeare Festival, and Winter's Tale, which I studied when I was in England, of all things. Both what I call, or what they may be called, problem plays, right?
Well,
his problem plays. But anyway, that's a whole, right, another show.
John, I just have been dying to ask you, did you study hermeneutics in
probably in some sort of...
It's because I went to a Christian college, and they mostly use it in interpretation of the Bible.
I have to say is I didn't study it because I can't even spell it.
Okay.
Me either.
Okay. Well, no, I've seen the word. I just didn't know what it means.
It's the study of Herman.
Okay.
Then I have that.
When are you able to get tickets for these things?
Tickets are actually on sale now
at the website
at performingarts.nd.edu. Okay. We actually work through the DeBartolo Performing Arts Center, the generosity of their ticket office. So if you go and search
in the summer, people plan ahead.
Absolutely. And so I would say, I mean, come here, spend a weekend. You know, if you're in the area, there's some of these shows you'll be able to see, you know, a matinee, go see the campus, and then go to the evening performance. There's a lot of opportunities where you can have a lot of
stuff to see on the Notre Dame campus.
Spend a weekend with Shakespeare this summer, but it's going to be amazing. Again, Winter's Tale is our professional company, and then a world premiere of a crazy farce called William Shakespeare's Long Lost First Play, Abridged.
There you go. Okay. Anyway, that wraps it up for us. Be sure to stop by our website and the store at theatergeeks.com/store. We got hats, cups, mugs, all kinds of stuff like that, including Marcia's favorite.
Oh, no. Coffee mugs.
Coffee mugs are her favorite, and the teddy bears. And John's teddy bears. Favorite.
John, no, I'm not going to talk about it. We have a guest.
All right. Well, we won't do that anymore. Anyway, you can find us on iTunes, of course, at the website. You can find us on Stitcher, On Demand Radio, TuneIn Radio, Blueberry Network, and everywhere where podcasts are bought and sold. Thanks again, Aaron, for joining us. And that's it from us. I'm Dave Dufour.
I'm John Schaup.
And I'm Marcia Fulmer. And we are Theater Geeks.
Music for Theater Geeks was provided by MusicAlley.com.
Theater Geeks is a production of the Dufour Creative Network.